Welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm your host, Bathsheba Monk, and tonight I am thrilled to welcome author Matt Crane to talk about his new book, Reading Dubliners. Matt's short stories have appeared in Harper's Magazine and have been anthologized in the Best American Short Stories. Matt's book, Reading Dubliners, is an account and close reading of James Joyce's famous collection of short stories, Dubliners. And before I let Matt get a word in edgewise here, although he already did.
Yeah, I do talk a lot.
I have to say that Reading Dubliners is the most surprising, pleasurable, funny, intelligent read I have had in a long time. And I think everyone who has read The Dubliners, every teacher who teaches The Dubliners, and anyone who has ever thought about writing well and what that means should immediately go online and buy a copy of Reading Dubliners.
Well, thank you. Thank you. The check's in the mail.
Okay. That's your Christmas present, Matt. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm proud to be here. I'm pleased to be here.
So first of all, tell us what the book consists of. And, I mean, how you set it up. What is it? Is this lit crit? I wasn't sure when I was reading it. Is this, like, actually lit crit, or is it a memoir? Or
yes,
what?
It's both. It's both. I got this term celebratory criticism from someplace, and I thought that that just fits what I was trying, what I'm doing in this book. I'm going to blend, breaking stories down, just the nuts and bolts of them, with my autobiography, my life. I'm going to blur these whole boundaries. I'm not going to keep me out of my trying to understand these stories.
Right. So the book is basically set up so there's a preface which tells why you wrote it, mm-hmm. and then there's essays mm-hmm. which you talk about each of the stories in
right.
The Dubliners.
Right.
So what was the impetus to write this book?
Well, I wanted to kill this guy. I was in this writing group, and we were reading Dubliners. And he and I just
Where was the writing?
This
was
in
group?
San Francisco, California.
So set the scene for us. What is?
Well, it's 2009, San Francisco, California. It's absolutely beautiful fall, and this little bookstore called Symposium that had a 3-year glory run. The owners decided to quit, and the last book that we read was Dubliners.
So was it the same group that...
No, it was different. There were basically 5 or 6 classes every week going on at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And these people were just hardcore readers, tremendous readers. Anyway, I got in this class with my archenemy. I had never seen this guy before, but I hated him on sight. He hated me on sight. I interrupted him. He interrupted me. It was like we were... what can I say? So it finally gets down to the last class, and we were going to devote this class to the dead. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just my favorite story. I just go wild every time I read it. And everything I'd say, he would argue with. And everything, you know, I'd say, he'd argue with. It was just, and we were sitting right across the table from each other. I got so mad I couldn't even look at him. You know mm-hmm. how when people get mad, they turn red? Well, yeah. I was white. Right. I wanted to kill this guy.
Because you didn't agree with his interpretation of the
Not
dead.
At all. Uh-huh. He was a boor. That's B-O-O-R.
Okay.
And a B-O-R-E. And I hope he's listening.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this is syndicated in California.
Uh-huh.
Hi, I'm on the radio and you're not.
Okay.
So finally, after class, I got off onto this whole thing about the main character, Greta Conroy. Her overshoes. Yes, of the dead. I got off on this whole trying to give an answer of why they are late, why mm-hmm. she and her husband, Gabriel Conroy, are late.
Late to the Christmas party.
To the Christmas party. And mm-hmm. to me, they were fighting over her overshoes. She didn't want to wear them, and her right. husband wanted her to wear them. Well,
right.
this guy, he said, that's ridiculous. Absolutely
right.
stupid. So that just set me off.
Mm-hmm.
So after class... I was walking back home, and I just stopped. I said, that's it. I am going to write a book. And every sentence that guy interrupted, I'm going to finish my sentence. That's all I want of
it. So this is like this is a revenge book.
Absolutely. And
okay.
I want to tell you, mm-hmm. revenge is It's darn tasty cold, served cold, but it's even better hot.
Okay.
You know, with the knife in your hand when you're hacking somebody up into pieces. It's
right.
really
well,
wonderful.
We did a brilliant job of doing that. So
that's it. It's pure hatred.
So it's pure...
Pure hatred.
And wanting to get the last word, I would
Absolutely
say.
Absolutely the last word.
Right. So I would say that this is it. So, okay. So you are so passionate about this because you love the Dubliners, though, right?
Right.
And so why is that? Here you are, you're a Kentucky boy.
I know. It was like 30 years ago in 1983, I was in this English class and I hated it. I didn't want to read. I had always hated reading. The only thing I'd ever read was the Bible. Well, if I'm going to pass this class, I've got to write a 5-page paper. Now, I know Hitler is, you know, known for some dastardly deeds, but anybody who would assign a 20-year-old person to write 5 pages is really, that is the limit. That is the limit. I could not understand how this teacher would be so cruel to make me write 5 pages.
So you picked up...
I had this terrible crush on the girl that I sat right behind in class, and I had heard her say out in the hall that she was going to, because she's Catholic, and I had heard her say that she was going to choose James Joyce to write her paper on. Well, I'd never heard the name James Joyce. I thought, what kind of man is it who has a woman's last name? You know, it's like, well, what is he? You know, is it like,
you really
it's
are
like
from
a
Kentucky.
Hermaphrodite.
You're like from
very sheltered,
Kentucky. Right?
Very sheltered.
Okay.
So, rural, yeah.
So this would pick, so you said, I got to read this to
I've got to read this.
To impress this girl.
Absolutely. And I went to the library and I found this book. I just looked at the table of contents, which is the shortest story. And there was the one that was 5 pages on it. All right, I can write 5 pages about a 5-page story. Well, it just threw me because, you know, the first paragraph has this very strange word called barmbrack and this other strange word called drumcondra. And
what kind of words are they? Are they
they were just these old fashioned.
Are they English or Irish?
Irish words.
Uh-huh.
And they sounded like the words that my grandparents, who were Irish, the words that they would say, you know, like bloody flux and the epizootic and all these funny-sounding, weird-sounding words. So I read this story and I thought, well, this is ridiculous. Obviously, literature is for idiots because nothing happens. It's not like the Nancy Drew stories or the Poseidon Adventure. I had read the Poseidon Adventure when I was a kid. Nothing happens in this story. This old lady goes to a party and these girls are mean to her. Well, so what?
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the story. I wrote the essay and just forgot about James Joyce. Good. Thank goodness I passed the class and I didn't get the girl. Everything is now resolved. We're going. A year later, I just happened to run into this thing called Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. And well, that just set me on fire. So then I went back and, you know, read, oh yeah, James Joyce. I'm going to go back and read Dubliners.
Mm-hmm.
And from suddenly, I don't know what happened, what kind of strange metamorphosis occurred in a year, but all of a sudden I realized, man, I've never heard anybody talk like this guy named James Joyce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his sentences are so musical. I just absolutely fell in love with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a musical background, so talk about that. I was going to ask you about that later, but let's talk about that now. You said his sentences are so musical.
Yes, they are so musical, and I don't mean like, you know, they rhyme or they have alliteration or anything like that. I mean, it's something like, it's just some kind of a feeling that comes over me when, like, you listen to, like, Beethoven or Mozart, Wagner, somebody just heavy, the most heavy-duty stuff that is absolutely convicted. And then underneath that, there's just this, it's kind of like this thing that, like, slithers through this thing, and that's the music. To me, it's just, you know, I know it when I feel it. You know what Emily Dickinson said? I know when I read a poem because the hair stands up on the back of my neck. Well, I know that I'm hearing music in this when it happens, especially through the dead. It's an ecstatic story, absolutely ecstatic, ecstatic musical story.
Mm-hmm. And so you sort of
And I was a music major.
So you were a music major. And so what happened? When did you decide to write? When did that shift happen?
Well, I transferred to Bard College, and they require all of their freshmen and anybody who goes to that school has to go through what they call the writing and thinking program. Now, I had never, I mean, this 5-page paper and a 5-page paper in high school, was almost, so in my life, at the age of 20, 21, I had written 10 pages. I hated writing. I would just freeze up at the idea of it. I was offended that anybody even asked me to. All of a sudden, we used this book called Writing with Power by Peter Elbow. And the first chapter is about free writing. All you're going to do, you're just going to keep your pen moving for like 10 minutes, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. That just turned the switch on. I remember the first day of class, I just had this vivid picturing in my mind of the day that my grandmother had her first child, and I was in that room in 1926. I was just absolutely floored me. It floored me what words could do. And I realized, gosh, I'm better at this. I'm better at writing than I am composing music, because, you know, I'm just sitting here beating my head against the wall, mm-hmm. trying to be a composer.
So you changed, and then you started reading something beside the Bible, because that's, you know, if I can just interrupt you for a second. I told you I wanted to get a word in edgewise here.
Yeah, well.
Good luck, right? Because I thought this was going to be an academic book when I picked it up, and I kept looking for references and footnotes, and you really quote the Bible.
Yes, I do.
Most of all.
I know.
And you're not really a religious person, though.
No, I'm not. I'm a heathen. It's weird. Here I am, you know, 51 years old, and the first thing that strikes me in these stories, or my take on them, it has to do with the Bible. So that just shows that, you know, it's my grandmother, from the time I was big enough to sit up, my grandmother read the Bible to me. And mm-hmm. you just get this voice in your head, and it's the Old Testament. You get this absolute conviction of this voice into your ear.
So it was like the ultimate authority.
It was the ultimate authority. And then when I understood what these words were telling me, and that, you know, I'd better be good or else, well, you know, that just warped me. Mm-hmm. And the problem with growing up in a fundamentalist church is that it is how it affects my reading, because I don't like ambiguity. I don't want any kind of cryptic thing. You know, if you're going to tell me how to live until the big day comes when I'm, you know, mm-hmm. damned or redeemed, let's call it, then I want to know. I want you to be very clear about it. I don't want to have to make up my own mind. That's mm-hmm. a shocking thing to say. It's terrible. But that has just, what do you want to say? It even influences me in the subjects that I will pick for writing a story, because I would prefer to be given a topic rather than to choose my own, because I fear that somewhere along the line, you know, centuries from now, I will be called to give an account of my choice that mm-hmm. absolutely that chills
so,
me.
So this was perfect, really.
It's embarrassing to say.
Because this book then was sort of like an assignment in a way.
Yes, it was.
That you would. And one of the things I want to talk about is that the thing I loved about this book most of all was not just the close reading of the stories, but that you impose yourself a lot on your own story into
right.
it. For example, when you're talking about Eveline,
yes,
and she's trying to leave her father and her nephews to run away with a man, to have her own life,
right.
And then and she doesn't finally, because she's scared of the water. She won't get on the boat. And so you talk about your own fear of swimming. So mm-hmm. tell us about, like, that. I mean, maybe that's more of a statement that you did that, but, like...
Well, it's a stupid fear. You know, I know it is purely fear, and I have only to take swimming lessons and learn how to swim to get over, to defeat my fear, but I won't do it.
But neither would Eveline. She wouldn't...
I know. I'm going to hold on to that rail. For that iron rail, that just like her, I'm going to grip that thing until my arm breaks.
Mm-hmm. But
I'm not letting go of that rail.
But that's really one of the beauties of this book, and that one essay in particular, is that you bring it home to yourself. It's not just an academic exercise. It's really a you're telling about yourself. You're exposing yourself and your struggles.
Yeah.
along with it. Yeah. So was that a conscious choice you made when you started writing?
Well, as conscious as I could be in my determination to ram this book down this guy's throat.
Okay. Okay. I think this is probably a good time to take a little break.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater, presenting Christmas City Follies Thursday, December 5th through the 22nd at Touchstone Theater. A Bethlehem holiday tradition, this Touchstone Theater Ensemble created classic yet again reimagines what the holidays are all about with music, wit, and holiday hijinks. For information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
We're gearing up for a short on-air membership drive starting Monday, December 9th. We want to encourage new members to come on board this month. If you've been listening but haven't become a member yet, please consider doing so now. You can help us reach our goal sooner by taking care of your membership today. Log on to WDIY.org and pledge your support. Thank you.
This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon. We're talking with Matt Crane, author of Reading Dubliners. So, Matt, this book is really about, a lot of it's you're measuring yourself against James Joyce.
I know.
And and it's very hard to get off the dime when that's your goal is one of the masters of the English language, don't you think? So,
yep.
But one of the things that I remember, one of the stories, or the essays, I mean, is The Tears of Tommy Chandler.
Yeah.
That seems to me to be you, in a way. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes.
Tommy the wannabe. And there's this one sentence, and this is a beautifully written book, by the way. I must say, this is one of the best written books I've read in a long time. But when you say this, this is what you said about him. Tommy is gnashing his childish teeth over a story that, quote, as far as, this is quoting you, as far as Tommy is concerned, will never be told. He will have none of the relief of the sound of it leaving him. He won't tell it. He will endure it in silence. You're talking about a would-be writer, but you could really be talking about anybody whose dreams have been sidetracked.
And self-sidetracked.
And self-sidetracked, yeah.
By simply his timidity, when he says, I can't remember the exact words it's about. He curses his own. The worst curse you can ever have is to be timid, and to know that, for your character to know that, basically in I think it's paragraph 3, and here's like a 14-page story. Well, how do you get past that realization about yourself?
Yeah.
To me, you'd think if I wrote that story, I would have killed it with that little sentence. Oh, timidity is the worst curse.
Mm-hmm. But in your essay here too, you have probably the best exhortation to would-be writers to write that I have read, and I would like it if you would. Would you mind reading it to
us
here?
Sure. It's that. Yes. This is the very end. Well, I'll just read it. How much would you?
Well, let's see. I think we can do that. Do you think?
Oh, the whole thing? Sure. I'm a fast reader. I'm a motor mouth.
Okay.
Tommy, maybe you don't know James Joyce told a story about you, Tommy, but he did. And it ends with you standing in your little room off the hall with tears of remorse in your eyes. Don't let that be the end of the story, Tommy. Make it merely the end of the scene. Do you follow? Do you see the difference? Don't let the reader say, this guy wants to write poems? What a loser. We are not going to let them say that, Tommy, because starting tomorrow, you are going to get a pencil and pad of paper, and you're going to put them in your pocket. And anything you notice as you walk to and from work or while you're at work, you're going to write it down. And if that means writing in the John so your boss doesn't catch you, so be it. See, I'm channeling the drill sergeant from Full Metal Jacket there.
I got that.
Look, Tommy, when I finish hanging wallpaper, my day's not over. I got to go work for the San Francisco Symphony, and that means 5 more hours, and I won't get home before 10 o'clock. My wife calls and offers me a ride, and I usually tell her, no, I want to walk. Why walk 2 miles when I'm dog tired? Runaways licking the tomato sauce off the pizza paper while their dogs chew the crust. Bums down on their knees between parked cars studying a picture of Teddy Roosevelt. Drunks in flip-flops stomping at a snake. Oh, geez, this is the cussing part.
Yeah, please don't say anything.
Don't say
that. Let us lose our license, okay? Thank you.
Anything that strikes me, Tommy, I step out of the crowd and stand beside a wall or store window, and I take my notebook out of the satchel and the big pen stuck in the spiral wire for this very purpose, and I write down what I saw or heard, and I keep at it until I write it right, until I get it. Sometimes it flows out, sometimes it doesn't. The words kink up and people stare at me scribbling on the top of a trash can like I'm some kind of nut bent on proving that Stephen King shot John Lennon. Or maybe I'm taking dictation from some distant galaxy, when really I'm describing how some blobs rise in a lava lamp in a head shop window. I may never use a word of all these things, Tommy, and moments and moods and impressions that I have written down. But I still wrote them down. Writing the poetic moments of your life is easy. You got to go out of your way not to write. Stop being mean to yourself, Tommy. You say it's useless to fight against your fortune? Well, go down swinging. Fatalism will kill you, Tommy, if you let it. But don't you let it. Repeat after me, Tommy. Pen. Paper. Eyes open. Ears open.
Thank you.
There were other dirty words. How
I appreciate
up,
you censoring yourself.
You know,
okay.
It doesn't come easy, let me tell you.
Right. Okay.
I had to try that part.
Yeah, Neil would never let us get away
no,
with it.
No, he would not.
Anyway. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what do you think James Joyce would think of your assessment of his writing?
Oh, I don't know. He would probably say, you're just so stuck in this, you know, this fundamentalist way of reading, or I don't know. It would be terrifying. I don't know.
You'd be scared.
You got me on that one.
Yeah. Okay. But how about the man that you're writing this book for?
What would he think?
Yeah.
I would. It's weird. You know, I came to understand that guy and I, we were just so much alike at the very core.
Right, at the end of the day. Right.
So if I hate him, then I necessarily have to hate me, mm-hmm. you see. And mm-hmm. I don't want to do that.
Right.
I don't want to do that. What would I don't know what I'd say to the guy. I really don't
but
know.
But you got it out of your system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It could come back, though, at a moment's notice, let me tell mm-hmm. you. Because just seeing that guy's eyes in my mind, it's enough to drive me crazy.
Well, we're really happy that you got it out of your system.
Well, thank
because
you, thank
this
you.
Is a really, mm-hmm. it's a wonderful book. It's a great book
thank
for
you.
Anybody who loves literature, who loves James Joyce, who loves the Irish, and mm-hmm. loves mm-hmm. to read. Mm-hmm. And so we thank you for writing it. And what's next?
I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I've got some, you know, drafts of this, that, and the other started. I hate to give you such a nothing of an answer, but...
Mm-hmm. You're going to take out your notebook like you're telling Tommy Chandler to do, right?
And, yes.
And just keep writing.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I have to. I'd better.
That's right. Okay, because Tommy will come and get you.
That's right.
Okay, so thank you so much for being our guest tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Matt Crane's new book, Reading Dubliners, is out now. So treat yourself to a copy. This is Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. I'm Bathsheba Monk.